Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome into the RotoWire Fantasy Football Pod. I'm so used to saying basketball, Joe, but we are firing up our full off-season podcast schedule starting this week. You'll start to see a lot more RotoWire football pods coming your way. We'll be putting out, you know, at least four episodes a week, sometimes more. Obviously, the NFL draft on the horizon. We just had the combine last weekend. Plenty of news to discuss. Franchise tag deadline passed yesterday. We got some signings, some veteran tight ends that we're just so excited to talk about. Joe Bartle, I'll be doing this with you every Tuesday or Wednesday, probably usually Wednesdays, but we got a little bit of flexibility. We'll be doing these all throughout the offseason. Very much looking forward to it. Let's get right into the news. We got just massive, massive news here. Zach Ertz signing a one-year deal with the Commanders. And our guy, Jonnu Smith, the long-lost Jonnu Smith. Still technically a free agent, but sounds like he might be closing in on a deal with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, and in both those instances, the veteran tight ends, they were released prior, so they won't count against the compensatory format, which I think is going to matter this offseason. Everyone talked about the cap going up and, oh, it's $30 million, so every team has $30 million to spend. Well, no, it was about $10 million more than a lot of people were projecting. Even like the spot tracks of the world were doing a little bit less. So just because everyone has maybe $10 million more, that does not mean that every free agent is going to go to these obvious spots. And what happens with those compensatory picks, I think, is going to be a very impactful part of it. But Jonnu and Zach Ertz won't count against that. In the case of Zach Ertz, I mean, Logan Thomas was supposed to be a cap casualty for the Commanders last year, ended up having a bit of fantasy relevance if he faded the tight end position and didn't get like a Laporta, one of the rookie tight ends, late in the beginning of drafts. I wasn't ever really interested in Logan Thomas, even in the off instances where he goes to the Cardinals or one of those plus matchups. And I would feel even more certain I'm not interested in Zach Ertz with the Commanders. We'll have to see what the offense looks like, especially now with Cliff Kingsbury there. That wasn't a super great fantasy offense anyway. And they had Kyler Murray. I guarantee the Commanders are going to have a downgrade compared to Kyler Murray at quarterback. And Zach Ertz is very uninteresting to me. The Jonnu Smith signing, though, and it's not official yet, but it sounds like Smith has been rumored and likely going to the Dolphins, is interesting from a football perspective. You look at Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill and Raheem Mostert and Von Achan. I would imagine in a fantasy aspect, those guys are all going to be premium assets relative to Jonnu Smith. But Durham Smythe got some work last season too. And if you're projecting what Jonnu Smith is going to look like in this offense, I mean, last year with the Falcons, when it played like what, seven games, it felt like, Nick, where he's fantasy relevant. His numbers, and I just want to make sure I haven't pulled, 50, 582 and three touchdowns. That was a career year for Jonnu Smith. I feel like we've been talking about Jonnu Smith as a guy that's going to emerge for four seasons now. I'm skeptical that that's actually going to happen in Miami, especially with all those other weapons.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, I feel like Jonnu Smith was more fantasy relevant than I wanted him to be at times last year. Like, I think there was a 3 or 4 game stretch where he was outproducing Kyle Pitts, which, like, good for Jonnu Smith, but that's not exactly what we were looking for. I'm with you. You know, the Dolphins, obviously, they're a more appealing fantasy situation right now than the Commanders are. But at the same time, it's a team that has marginalized the tight end position under Mike McDaniel. I think there's a reason that, you know, they were ultimately just totally fine letting Mike Gesicki kind of fall into irrelevance and then head out to New England. You know, a guy who had, I thought, proven himself as a pretty good receiving tight end. And they're like, yeah, it's just not really what we're looking for in that position. But, you know, it's the Dolphins. They're going to score points, so we have to have some interest there. And then on Zach Ertz, you know, at this point in his career, hard to get overly excited. I am optimistic that the Commanders won't be as depressing this year, right? I mean, you have the infusion of, you know, could be Jaden Daniels, could be Sam Howell, whoever it is at number two. But at the same time, or I said Sam Howell, Drake May. At the same time, you know, it's really, really tough to trust this team. You know, it's been borne out over the last like 25 years. Although it does feel like the Commanders in general are turning over a new leaf, right? Like they're not as complete of a top-down embarrassment as they've been in years past, but it totally matters what kind of quality of quarterback play you're getting from a rookie. And, you know, ultimately it's hard to get super fired up about Zach Ertz, but those are the new news items of the day. So we do need to talk about that.
It's ironic that you mentioned Sam Howell, and I know you're speaking in context to Drake May, but
yes, accidentally mentioned Sam Howell.
Right. But no, I think there's actually some merit to, and I think the Commanders, especially with all the news that we've heard about their ownership group, wanting to be flashy, you know, the possible hiring of Ben Johnson and what kind of occurred there. And you're familiar with that ownership group too, being an NBA fan that you are. I wonder if they keep Sam Howell for one more year. There's been rumors about the Commanders trading Sam Howell, what that would look like. Would they get an early day three pick? Well, that's where they took Sam Howell 2 years ago. So you're more or less getting a bargain for it. The analytical approach would be, let's say, let's build around everyone else. We still have this cheap quarterback, even if he is good. If he's not good, you could say your coaching scheme last year was dead in the water from the jump, and therefore Sam Howell never really got a true shake. I don't personally believe that, but there is easily a money ball realm of things where you took that number two pick. And it's what I've been saying. I think the Patriots should do is trade down 2 or 3 times. That team is not ready to compete at a significant level. And in this draft class, you could pull off what the Eagles did a couple of years ago, which ultimately was part of that Chris Olave trade where the Saints got up, gave up their first round next year. The Commanders or Patriots or someone within the top five should take advantage of a dumb team. I don't know what dumb team there is, but there's plenty in the NFL that wants to go up and get one of these quarterbacks, get a first-round plus pick next year, and keep kind of stacking. I mean, the Bears are in one of the more enviable positions, and I hate saying this as a Packers fan.
Because it took advantage. Very big of you to say that.
Right, with the Panthers and the DJ Moore, and like getting DJ Moore as well, and Bryce Young didn't look good from the jump as well, and CJ Stroud ended up working out. Like, this draft class, I think, is more ripe than ever, and we're going to discuss it. There's going to be other podcasts on this network that discuss it even further. The top 15 picks or so, if 11, 10 of them go offense first, not just skill guys, but also offensive line, I wouldn't be shocked. And that's a sexy thing. The Commanders have to avoid being sexy, I think, to get better. They could take advantage of it and therefore keep Sam Howell. But either way, whether it be Drake May or Jaden Daniels, which would be a long shot at number two, especially after the combine, but fine, or Sam Howell, nobody interests me when it comes to Zach Ertz. Like, we're good. We're good with that one.
All right, let's talk franchise tag. We had the deadline pass yesterday afternoon. Handful of players tagged. Almost more interesting to me, Joe, fantasy-wise, some players who were not tagged. Most notably, a couple big-name running backs in Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs. You know I'm always keeping an eye on the sports books, Joe. That's you know, where I make a lot of my bones. And I love these next team odds that are up at DraftKings.
Where are they? Are they on DraftKings right now?
They're on DraftKings. Yep, you can find odds for Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins, Saquon, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Stephon Diggs, and Chris Jones. So not everybody, but a lot of the big name guys. Saquon Barkley, next team, Houston Texans -200.
Interesting. So I'll talk to Saquon Barkley in a second, but real quick with those draft odds, if one of the sports books did know unequivocally, or at least had an idea that this player was going to go there, they wouldn't offer minus 200. Like if it was that big of a layup that a sports book knew, they would make it like minus 750 or whatever else. And this came into conversation when it was heavily rumored Justin Fields would be going to the Steelers or Falcons, and it was like minus 200. If that was actually real, they would lose significant amount of money, because if they know, other people would know and put large money. So it's an attempt. And we in the industry, Nick, are aware that they're doing this to draw interest, and whatever odds might lie, they're taking advantage of the people that would then bet on NBA or NHL, whatever else too. But I take these specifically with a grain of salt. That being said, if we're to go over the list, and I think it's best to start first with just the overwhelming amount of running backs that are good that will be available this year. So Austin Eckler, Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, DeAndre Swift, Derrick Henry isn't quite in that mix yet, but we figure the Titans are going to cut him given where that team is at this season. And that's not to include the Antonio Gibsons, AJ Dillons of the world, Zach Moss, Gus Edwards, Zeke, Delvin Cook, Devin Singletary. I mean, these are all 10 or 11 different running backs that had significant snap shares last season, or at least in Delvin Cook's mind, he thought he should have had a significant snap share. That's a large amount. So there is going to be a roulette of teams with these running backs. If and when let go of Barkley, for example, do they sign Austin Eckler? Do they sign somebody else? My answer is probably yes. I think the Texans are going to get one of these big guys. And if I were the Texans, with CJ Stroud's contract the way it is, Nico Collins yet to be paid, your defense still pretty young, they should sign Saquon Barkley. I think that would make a big difference. And you could structure that contract to be a 3 or 4 year deal, which would then coincide for when Stroud gets his massive deal. There's very easy ways to do that. However, if you are being a smart team, we know history of the past 10 years says don't sign these running backs to massive deals, Miles Sanders being the latest example. So minus 200, the Texans should be in for one of the running backs, whether it be Barkley. Maybe they could avoid the Derrick Henry dagger game that happens twice a season. They just signed Derrick Henry outright. But I have to imagine, with the star power that's available and the guys that can command three down work, the Texans are going to have one of these favorites.
I would be surprised if Barkley ultimately signs like a 3 or 4 year deal. Maybe it's called that and there are opt outs. I just don't know what teams are willing to.
You think he's going
to
go longer?
No, I think shorter. I just don't think teams are going to hand him anything close to like 3 or 4 guaranteed years, right? I think that's increasingly where we're going, especially with veteran running backs, is these kind of year to year type of deals. So I wouldn't be surprised if he signs somewhere and they say it's a 3 year deal, but there's an opt-out after one or an opt-out after two or something like that. I just don't know if that market's going to be there for Saquon. But, you know, Houston or otherwise, where do you want him to land specifically for fantasy? You know, I think the LA Chargers are another team that's been in the mix. You know, people have thrown the Dallas Cowboys out there. You know, if they were to go away from Tony Pollard, you know the Cowboys are at least going to like feign interest in Saquon Barkley, because that's what the Cowboys do. In theory, it's possible he could go back to the Giants. To me, it feels like that bridge is probably burned, and for fantasy purposes, I don't want him to go back there. And you know, then you get into some really intriguing teams like the Ravens or the Eagles. Beyond that, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot of realistic landing spots. But you know, is Saquon to you somebody who needs to be in a decent spot for you to invest in what will, you know, ultimately be a reasonably lofty cost? Or do you look at what he's done with the Giants and say, man, this, in some ways, maybe it's not the baseline, but it's easy to dream on what he could do in a much better situation?
So everyone's going to talk about Barkley's health, and I understand he's missed time over the past 2 or 3 seasons, but those felt like a little bit fluky injury stuff. Maybe there's ankle injuries that you could say, but I if I'm signing Barkley and I'm a team, I'm assuming I'm going to get a top 7 at worst running back for at least 2 seasons. And then the fall off might be whatever it might be, given Barkley's workload and yada, yada. So if I'm getting one of the top 7 running backs in the league for the next 2 seasons, there's a lot of teams that make sense. You mentioned the Chargers. That would be a really interesting landing spot, especially now with Jim Harbaugh bringing on the killer of Justin Herbert's fantasy dreams and Greg Roman. I despise that hire. I think it's entirely stupid, but I get that the Harbaughs love Greg Roman more than you and I love our parents. Like that's fine. The Harbaughs got their weird thing with Greg Roman. That's that. Barkley would actually make sense for what that scheme could be. And as much as I just crapped on Jim Harbaugh and should be, they're going to win more games because they are by default better than the Brandon Staley led Chargers. So yes, I mean, you can finally add some pedigree to what we all believe Justin Herbert's talent could be with Saquon Barkley. They're cap strapped though, the Chargers, that is, whether it be Mike Williams or Khalil Mack or Keenan Allen, one of those three, if not two of those three. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Khalil Mack is traded or cut due to the cap restraints that the Chargers have. They are not in a position to sign a guy, whether it be a Mirage 3-year deal to someone like Barkley. So I don't see them in that spot. A Gus Edwards to Los Angeles, that one makes more sense to me. Even like a Zach Moss, and then you draft another guy and you work alongside those two. That's the realm in which I think the Chargers can pay afford to pay the running backs, no matter what the position is. The answer is the Ravens. Like if I'm to workshop my favorite landing spot for Saquon Barkley, the way they are creative with their cap space, I think the opportunity to add to Lamar Jackson's explosiveness, like if you think of Lamar Jackson's asset, even in the NBA terms, what will help build on that? What makes Wembanyama better? It's going to be having a point guard. I think a guy like Lamar Jackson, already MVP now two times over, having Saquon Barkley adds another dynamic element, even more so than J.K. Dobbins, even more so than Gus Edwards. And I think the Ravens could pull that off. I think Saquon Barkley would take a cheaper deal. The way they operate with Odell Beckham and kind of the stars they've had of yesteryear, that might entice Saquon Barkley. So if it isn't the Texans, which would be near the top, I would love him to go to Baltimore. It would make sense from his underdog ADP, which is around 16 to 20.
Man, just picturing Saquon in a Ravens jersey.
Well, it looks nice too, right? There is that to it.
Yeah, those are arguably the best colors in the league. I would love for him to finally get to a situation like that. Overall, Joe, we do have a pretty loaded free agency class when it comes to running backs. You know, beyond Barkley, beyond Jacobs, there's still Austin Eckler out there, Swift, Pollard. You could get into some of those secondary options, you know, like Antonio Gibson, like our guy AJ Dillon. You know, we'll see what's left of J.K. Dobbins' knee after this latest injury. But, you know, how do you contrast this with what's ultimately a pretty weak running back draft class, right? I'm not saying there's not depth. There's guys who are going to make impacts next year. But obviously there's not a Bijan Robinson. There's not a singular prize. And I think it's very, very likely that we don't see a running back going round one. And even coming out of the combine, you know, a couple guys made some waves, but it just doesn't really feel like there's this group of backs that teams are going to be thrilled to get their hands on. So how do you contrast that with this market of proven free agents?
Yeah, if anything, the combine, it was a lot of speed guys, which is great. Along the Devon Achans of the world, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on. I'm shocked what his underdog value is currently. There's some value to that, and maybe there could be this year's Devon Achan from this class, but you were hoping Blake Corum, especially if you're wanting a first-round running back, would run faster than his 40 time. That was bad enough, even though he benched, I think, 27 reps, which is insane. That was slow enough where he's going to be, I would assume, a day two pick, if not a little bit later on. If there's betting odds out there right now, Nick, again, you would know better than I, running back gets taken in round two, or running back gets taken round three, I'm sure plus money odds be on round three, but like that's the kind of level in which we're at with these rookie running backs at the moment. So I went through the list of teams that could possibly use a starter or a depth piece. And again, I'm thinking depth being like the AJ Dillons and Antonio Gibsons and Zach Mosses. Devin Singletary gets added to that mix. So there's the Bears. Like I know Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson combined to be effective. What they do differently if and when they draft Caleb Williams, I don't know. They have a lot of free agent money, and I could see them wanting to say, I mean, it's such an easy story to tell. If you're the Bears front office, we drafted this rookie quarterback. We want to add more value. Let's go ahead and get an Austin Eckler. Like, think about how good that offense will be when they have a short yardage guy in the intermediate passing game as Austin Eckler. Great. The Bengals, like, they have been rumored to cut Joe Mixon out for the past 2 years. If they added Joe Mixon to that list, could they cycle through somebody slightly cheaper who's trying to bring chase a little bit with Joe Burrow? I would assume the Bills are going to get somebody along the ilk of Latavius Murray, or they sent another guy too at the same time. One of those power short yardage backs.
Fournette.
Well, no, but not even Fournette. There was somebody before Harris, the Patriot, Damien Harris.
Oh yeah, Damien Harris. Yeah.
Right. Like, you could do better than the Latavius Murray and Damien Harris, who both got like $3 million deals in the offseason last year. They're going to look for somebody else to complement James Cook. The Browns have been rumored as well to be cutting Nick Chubb, given that Deshaun Watson poison pill contract is really starting to hit now. Nick Chubb could easily join this list too. And if that's the case, they'll sign one of these guys. The Commanders we talked about, I think the NFC East as a whole, Commanders, Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, all will need running backs. Rams, Ravens, Texans, Vikings. The Rams and Vikings one, I don't think it's talked about enough. I looked at the underdog rankings. Kyren Williams is getting drafted easily in the first round, somewhere between the mid to late. You're telling me with the LA star power, the possibility they could go back to the Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford and company, now Puka Nacua here too. theoretically more healthy, loaded with cap space and draft picks, that the LA glitz and glam is not going to sign some like a Delvin Cook-esque or a Zach Moss-esque to complement Kyron Williams. They have to. It's going to be too easy with all these free agent running backs available. I think they are going to be in the market for someone that competes with Kyron Williams. And I'll take the price of Kyron Williams in fantasy after that move occurs, because right now nobody's anticipating what I think is going to be inevitable. So that one, I'm very confident the Rams are going to sign somebody. And the other one is the Vikings, who just a couple days ago let go of Alexander Mattison. Right now you have Ty Chandler as your lone back. They don't have a whole lot of money either. They've been rumored to be trading up in the first round. That's one of the teams that the Commanders or Patriots could take advantage of. Dump team. If they were to trade up for a quarterback, that'd be the Vikings. They're going to sign somebody because they can. And I think that will be like the Devin Singletary of this year, whoever the Vikings end up signing to.
Yeah, all really good notes by you. I agree with you on the Rams. You know, and I think that will set off the alarm whenever they do inevitably bring someone in. But you know, what's interesting with a lot of these guys is, you know, we're not talking to like end of the career, you know, like, you know, just bring him in, you know, Zeke Elliott last year in New England, right? Where you're like, okay, yeah, I could see it, but you know, maybe you're in a, like a 50-50 timeshare at best.
There's like no Emmitt Smith guys, Cardinals, right? That's kind of,
well, the ultimate, yeah, the ultimate example, but you know, it's like Tony Pollard. We were really fired up about him this time last year. You know, Jacobs, Barkley, you know, Swift, these guys have plenty of tread left on the tires. You know, I think Derrick Henry is going to be the really interesting one because I still think Derrick Henry, based on what we saw last year, I mean, was in just a horrific situation. You know, I think it was those Texans games, especially both times they played them, felt like he was being hit behind the line like eight times per game. I still think he can make a huge impact, but most of these running backs, like most teams are relatively set. You know, you brought up a great example in Minnesota of a team that needs obvious help, but it's not like there are too many good running backs available where they can't all be like, I'm holding out for, you know, for a starting deal, right? Like you basically have to guarantee me to be the starter. Like that's all these guys are not going to walk into those situations. So I think that does create when they inevitably start signing, which who knows when that'll be. It could be, you know, later in the summer. There's going to be buying opportunities in the fantasy world. You mentioned Kyron Williams, by the way, his underdog ADP right now, 13.6 overall. So going just outside the first round in most 12 teamers, Rams got to add help at some point here. The Nick Chubb situation to me also very interesting. And I think Cincinnati, I can't remember if you mentioned them. I think Joe Mixon, you know, could be a cut candidate too. And I really like what I saw from Chase Brown last season. But given the position that the Bengals are in, which is kind of Super Bowl or bust going forward, especially this year with the T. Higgins situation and the Jamar Chase contract situation hanging over them, as much as I love Chase Brown, I don't think they go into next year if they do cut Joe Mixon not having some sort of secondary option.
So that's the thing. I think Joe Mixon, his contract last year would have equated to about $7 million. I don't know if he hit his guarantees or not, but the restructuring, which really was a bit of a downgrade, and Aaron Jones did the same thing for the Packers, about $7 million. I think the Bengals were happy with what they got out of Joe Mixon this year, but we have entered now 2 years of the, well, they probably could move on and get someone just as efficient, if not more so, for seven times less the price tag. And if you're saying Joe Mixon joins this list, if you're saying Nick Chubb joins this list of already five guys that I think are obviously going to be starters somewhere, but maybe not get the money you'd assume they would, Joe Mixon and probably Nick Chubb both are going to go for less than you'd think they would go for in the event they were cut. And I go back to Deshaun Watson with the Browns. They are in a very difficult cap spot where if you want a flexibility, if you said, hey, the system can do without Nick Chubb, who I think is going to be one of this decade's best running backs, fine. You're making the mistake of cutting him, but you're worried about coming off the injury, everything else. There's other complications with Nick Chubb. I understand that too. Both Mixon and Nick Chubb, that adds to it. The teams that are cutting these guys, though, are also the teams I think will inevitably sign somebody else for less. So what's going to happen is you have seven of these running backs, all in free agency, all quality backs that might go anywhere in the 1 year to $5 million to 1 year, $10 million range, depending on what you're expecting their value to be. And I go back to the Eagles too. Long rumored to be interested in Derrick Henry. There was thought that they were going to trade for him during the trade deadline. You would probably sign Derrick Henry to like a 1 year, $8 million deal if you're the Eagles, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
I don't know that there is another tier of Devin Singletary's last year. Again, I mentioned Gus Edwards because I think if you're signing Derrick Henry, does Gus Edwards give you 80% of what Derrick Henry does, 85%, but you could save $5 million? That's going to happen this offseason. Some teams are going to do that. and you're going to find a Zach Moss. I don't think AJ Dillon, but like that tier of running back is going to be right now. I would imagine being drafted outside round eight will easily by August end up as round six, seven, even five. We just have to kind of see where the dominoes fall with all these dudes.
Let's talk Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So the Bucs ended up using their franchise tag on Antoine Winfield prior to yesterday's deadline. Not a massive surprise there. You know, I think Baker was in contention. You know, tagging a quarterback like Baker is obviously an interesting move because, you know, his salary is going to jump for that 1 year. I would be very careful here if I was the Buccaneers, Joe. And I have a feeling that you might feel the same way. The Bucs were 9-8 last year, right? They won the division. They won a playoff game. That's all well and good. I don't know that this team has significantly more upside bringing Baker Mayfield back. You know, and I think the fact that they already re-signed Mike Evans is an indication that this is not a team that's necessarily looking to rebuild right now. And if you're not using the tag on Baker, that means you're likely still interested in working out a longer-term deal with him. If you were the Buccaneers, putting your Green Bay Packers 2024 NFL draft hat aside, because this is a team that, you know, is competing with the Packers for a playoff spot. If you're the Buccaneers, if you're a Buccaneers fan, do you want to sign Baker Mayfield to some sort of 3 or 4 year deal that's paying him, you know, 25 to 30, if not more, per year? Do you want to lock that in?
Yeah, I unfortunately have a lot of Bucs fans in my life. I don't know how that happened, given they've broken my heart so many times in the playoffs. I had been talking to them about that, and I just assumed this contract is going to be close to $40 million a year. Again, Derek Carr went for 38 last year. Daniel Jones signed a $40 million extension. To me, Baker Mayfield is on that par of quarterback, if not better, certainly than Daniel Jones. I just assume $40 million. Spotrac has Baker Mayfield's projected contract at like 4 year, $108 million. And that math-wise, I'm not great at math, about $27 million per year. If you're signing Baker to that, fine. It's kind of like what happened with the Seahawks and Geno Smith, who sort of stumbled into a starting quarterback. And I know the Seahawks didn't do a whole lot last year. The year before, I felt like they were like a year too early anyway, surprised a lot of folks. And maybe that was the reason Pete Carroll was gone this year, is because they didn't really improve upon that. There's only so much you can improve upon on Geno Smith. So that's where I go to your point. They've already hit their ceiling. At most, the Buccaneers end up being a two-win playoff team, which would be great. Like in the grand scheme of things, post-Tom Brady, 2 years removed, all that cap space invested in that Gronk, Antonio Brown, Tom Brady, New England, Tampa Bay light team, that you can win two playoff games in 2 years post-Tom Brady, you'd be happy with that. You'd be ecstatic. There are so many franchises that have dealt with mediocrity for a decade plus and to have some success in that regard. But it's the NFC South. I mean, truthfully, that's why this happens. You have a 9-8 team make the playoffs because the rest of the division was so putrid that you can pull off so many wins the way they did. And I think Baker Mayfield played great last season. I don't know if it's the offensive coordinator, who's now, of course, gone, if there's a scheme involved that helped Baker Mayfield, but he was play action heavy, just like there was during his high points at Cleveland. If you're saying you're going to operate that same way next season, I think there's a cap involved. Baker Mayfield is not going to win you games, but at this point in his career, as long as he's not losing you games too, you're fine with that. It's just that the team isn't built to then win without Baker Mayfield contributing extensively. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I'm not interested in Baker Mayfield at $35 million. If it's $27 million, that's the going rate of like the quarterback 20 through quarterback 16. I get it after the success they had last year, but that feels like Ryan Tannehill Titans version to me. And I think it feels a lot like Geno Smith as well. And talk to Seahawks fans. Are they ecstatic to have Geno Smith as their quarterback in year three? I would imagine no is the answer.
Well, that's the thing. It feels like you got in most ways a best case season out of Baker last year in terms of health, in terms of performance, in terms of final result, winning the division. But it took you until week 18 to lock that up in what was a terrible division that nobody wanted to win. You know, the Saints were just horrendous to watch all year. Obviously, Carolina was out of it from day one. And you know, I still think Atlanta is kind of the sleeper cell in the NFC South, right? It's like you get a competent coach in there. You get, you know, even like average quarterback play. And I think the Falcons are a team that easily could have won 10 or maybe even 11 games last year, depending on the upside at quarterback. So I think for Tampa Bay, it's a little bit of a short-sighted decision. And we also have to keep in mind, it's not like, you know, there's just a bevy of great quarterbacks sitting out there, right? You know, it's like not every team can have a quarterback that they love. So if somebody's got to, you know, have the Baker Mayfield types of the world. So I do acknowledge that. But to me, it's Tampa Bay looking around and saying, yeah, we don't really think the Saints are going to be that much better. Carolina, they're years away. You know, Atlanta is always a who knows type of team. Like, yeah, this could be our division for the next couple of years if we just remain static, which in some ways is a depressing way to think. But, you know, it's also a nice way to find your way into a playoff spot or even a wild card spot over the next couple of years.
Yeah. And people say, well, anything can happen. I'm just telling you right now, Baker Mayfield's not going to the Super Bowl. Like the end game result of a Baker Mayfield Buccaneers team is not going to be the result fans are truly shooting for. So if you are happy with getting in there, possibly winning one playoff game, great. And it's entirely possible. We haven't talked about Kirk Cousins, and I'm sure that's going to get solved Monday during the not true free agency part, but people will just reveal stuff anyway for agency. Kirk is going to sign with the Falcons, or he'll be locked in with the Vikings. I think it's one of the two. And if he signs with the Falcons, that team is easily the best in the division. Yeah. And then you've made a grave mistake committing to multiple years, Baker. But I would assume the funny money contract stuff, the void years they do, it'll be like a two-year, $60 million commitment total. And you get out, you know, in 2026 and are able to find the guy of the future. Or maybe you think Kyle Trask has finally gotten to that point, whatever else. So it's not the be-all, end-all. But I think you're right. When they signed Mike Evans, it was essentially saying, we'll also sign Baker Mayfield, too, to an extension. And rightfully so, given the results. It's just not going to be Super Bowl worthy.
All right, let's talk Jags real quickly. You know, I'm going to shoehorn this in here, and then we'll hit some best ball values. Jags used the tag on Josh Allen. I don't love it. Obviously, it's better than just not, you know, just like releasing him outright, essentially. But, you know, there's still hope that a long-term deal gets done there, and I'm hoping and praying each night before I go to bed that that happens. I would have preferred that it happened rather than burn the tag on him. You know, I think the path that most of Jags Twitter would have preferred would be to tag Ridley and re-sign Josh Allen, but that opportunity is now passed. So we're now looking at a reality where Calvin Ridley is hitting the open market in what's a pretty weak wide receiver free agency class with D Higgins, with Michael Pittman, with Mike Evans off the board. You know, it's Calvin Ridley. And then to me, there's even a drop down to guys like, you know, Hollywood Brown, Gabe Davis. And then you get into veterans like Tyler Boyd and Odell Beckham and Michael Thomas. Not names that you're rushing out to grab, but, you know, Ridley had his warts last season. I saw him firsthand, you know, watching all those games, but I still think he's by far the most intriguing of those names. And you know, the Jags are saying, yeah, we can still bring him back. And you know, we feel confident. If they do that, they're giving up a second round pick as part of the deal to trade for him last year with the Falcons. If he signs elsewhere, it's a third round pick. So the Jags have maintained all along that they don't really care about that. I'm not sure if I believe them, but I think they backed themselves into a corner now where if they feel like they need to bring back Calvin Ridley, you're doing it at an elevated price because there's going to be a bidding war for him this offseason. And I would say at this point, I don't think he's coming back to Jacksonville.
Yeah, the free agent markets of the past couple of years. I mean, last year, Alan Lazard was one of the top prizes. And you and I are both familiar with Alan Lazard. It's not good when that's one of the top prizes.
He's a good blocker.
Right. Ridley's a good player. And I think a lot of what happened last year is not on Calvin Ridley. You could blame it on the play calling. You know, I always call myself a disciple of Mario Puig and John McKechnie. And Mario will go to bat that Mr. Taylor is not at all what you want from a play calling perspective. And I would have to agree, given the talent they have. You could blame the offensive line. I think the Jags seem very invested, at least from the outside, that they want to add and improve that position, and rightfully so. I know some dumb people are going to blame Trevor Lawrence. That, again, you shouldn't do that, but fine if you feel like you want to be on the outside of incorrect choices, I guess. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons. I think Calvin Ridley is a really good player, and if he is the best receiver on the free agent market, fine. It's not a very good market, still better than last year, but he is going to get whatever the free agent top dollar might be. And I'm thinking somewhere along $22 to $24 million will be what some team ends up signing Calvin Ridley for. Yeah. And if he operates as the team's number one, that's probably a mistake. I mean, maybe like if it's CJ Stroud and Calvin Ridley and Nico Collins, with Nico Collins the one, Calvin Ridley, I think profiles is an excellent two. And then you still have Tank Dell. Like that's awesome. I don't know a scenario where Calvin Ridley as the top option makes me feel like that team's going to win. But we saw Amari Cooper with a swaddle of different Browns quarterbacks be a number one wide receiver, be a fantasy relevant guy. I mean, there are instances where that happens every single year. Drake London, another good example, still gets over 1,000 yards, even though he's had bad quarterback play each of his past two seasons. I would be concerned if I had like dynasty shares of Calvin Ridley that he signs with, let's just go Commanders, for example. Like Terry McLaurin, that wouldn't make sense, but like a bad team that doesn't have a quarterback. I think Calvin Ridley's smart. Like he's 29, right? To 28, 30. He's there isn't a lot left after losing that one season for suspension. If you're Ridley, you want to maximize this contract and the next one. So signing a two-year, three-year deal in a great spot, a spot for you as the player, and then getting one final deal, that would be the smart play. I go back to the NBA. That's what the NBA players do all the time. It's like the Chris Middleton takes that deal and then gets another final four-year contract here at the end of his deal with Milwaukee. I think you're going to see the smart players and smart teams do something like that. And Calvin Ridley, given his value on the open market, feels like the quintessential example of that.
All right, let's talk some best ball, Joe. I know you've been deep in the weeds on best balls, as a lot of people at RotoWire have. I've been firing some off as well. I have a couple completed, working through one right now. I was telling Jeff on the XM show today, I made the mistake of starting one on my drive up to the UP.
Losing cell service.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Got like 12 rounds in. I'm having a great time. Is it, you know, quick draft, 30-second pick clock. And basically you had to like half auto draft the rest of it. So I didn't love that. But you gotta be careful when you're firing those off. I love doing it, you know, on a plane. If you have Wi-Fi, if you're on a long car ride, the best way to pass the time. We love playing on Underdog. But I'm curious. I know you have a list of guys who you think are the best values at each position, some of the worst values. And, you know, one who stands out to me is Devon Achane at 17 overall. Love Achane. Love what we saw from him last season. I still worry about just the level of investment that you're making here on a guy when, you know, Raheem Mostert is still there. Maybe you'll feel differently about what his future is in Miami. And I worry more about the fragility of Devon Achane. So tell me why 17 is too high for him.
I just couldn't believe it when I saw that number. And I haven't done nearly as many best balls as you have. So that was like a what? Like I had to refresh it. I thought I pressed something wrong with the settings to have Devon Achane at 17. And I get it. In best ball, you are getting their best games. And when Achane was healthy and active as part of the lineup, you were getting insane numbers on a game to bank. It's not like you're trying to decide, do I start him this week or not? Like best ball, you're always getting that. So there's value in this format right now as you're drafting today, then there probably will be come August or anything else. That's even if Raheem Mostert comes back, anything like that. We had mentioned all these teams that need running backs this offseason that could. Delvin Cook was heavily rumored to join the Dolphins for much of last offseason. Now throw in seven other names plus Joe Mixon or Nick Chubb if they get cut. You're telling me the Dolphins won't be able to sign one of those guys for $4 million, for $5 million in a one-year deal. And it could even be the Tony Pollards of the world. It could be a Derrick Henry. Like, I think there's a lot of clout. Obviously, the atmosphere as well, too, makes a difference. Everyone wants to go play in Miami as opposed to Green Bay, right? Like, if you could choose the two, you're going to go ahead in Miami every second time. I would be stunned, much like Kyron Williams, if Devon Achane is not sharing the backfield with some high-profile name. Now, if it is Delvin Cook and Von Achane, you know what? Fine. I don't think Delvin Cook is anywhere near the level of running back he had been early in his career. I don't think Delvin Cook stays healthy. So if you're saying even 10 games of Von Achane at peak value of last year, that would make sense to me. I'm just not certain Von Achane stays healthy. I don't think he has the build to stay healthy. And just because the best ball value is there for what he does not make him want to be one of my cornerstones in the second round. Again, his ADP was at 17. I mean, we're talking like quality receivers in that same range, guys that are like automatic. I understand the running back position is really weird. Like Breece Hall is your second guy after McCaffrey, and then there might not be any more in the first round. It's going to be unorthodox come August when we really dive into the stuff more. Devon Achane should not be a second round pick ever.
So for context, you know, the receivers that you would be passing on or choosing between for Achane, we're talking in that range: Nico Collins, DJ Moore, Marvin Harrison, Ayuk, Devontae, Rasheed Rice. You know, those are the type of names that you'd be leaving on the table. Let's talk quarterbacks, Joe. A couple of the recent drafts that I did on Underdog, I had Matthew Stafford as a later round quarterback. I got him in the 130s. In another one, I took Jared Goff late, ended up pairing him with Caleb Williams. So kind of experimenting, you know, this early in the process, but I can't get myself to take a quarterback, you know, inside the top 60 or so picks. There's too much talent at the other positions in that range. And I, you know, feel pretty comfortable with some of the later round options. I know you like Joe Burrow, who's going on average about pick 72, but talk about him. And then, you know, some of the other quarterbacks, some of the veterans who you think are maybe sliding a little too far right now.
One of my philosophies this past draft season, and it worked out fairly well, is I wanted to have one of the top quarterbacks through the first seven rounds. Like my tier ended at Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. I didn't really end up getting many of those shares, but I did not want to dive into the Anthony Richardsons or Dak Prescott's or Jared Goff's. And I know ultimately that might've been wrong, but I was very happy to take the Mahomes's and Josh Allen's and Jalen Hurts where their price was, mainly because I didn't like guys in that same range. So when I'm saying Joe Burrow at 72, great. It is with the idea I want a top quarterback. I think there's value to it. Obviously, with the best ball formats and specifically underdog, the rushing aspect makes a lot more sense. So Fields is at 84. We don't even know if Fields is going to be on a team. I would assume he's on a team, but whether he's starting for the Bears or Steelers or Falcons, no clue right now, but still 84, 12 picks after Joe Burrow seems insane to me. And I think Burrow is fantastic, but that's the rushing aspect of things. I think there's absolutely a possibility where a guy like Jaden Daniels, you mentioned Caleb Williams, totally fine. I think it was like 114 was his underdog ADP. Jalen Daniels is going to add that rushing floor in the same way that Justin Fields does. I know they're different body types, but if you're drafting Jaden Daniels in the first round, you're doing so that he's going to start, but also you're understanding you're going to use him as a runner. That guy from a fantasy perspective makes a ton of sense too. So whether you're taking a Joe Burrow middle rounds, four, five, six, seven, that kind of range, or waiting on some of these veterans like Aaron Rodgers or even Russell Wilson. I won't talk about him in a sec, but like the Jaden Daniels makes total sense. So I like a lot of those quarterbacks that you go later on. This is shaping up, and I don't want to like jump the gun here in March when we're looking at August drafts. My philosophy was take one of those first seven or eight quarterbacks. I might wait a quarterback this year because I really want to have as many running back dice rolls as possible. And I know I like a bunch of receivers in the first four or five rounds. So that's from a roster build perspective, whether it be best ball or redraft, I'll take a Joe Burrow and I might not go high for any other quarterback because I just don't think there's opportunity to really exceed that draft capital at the moment.
I want to get to Russell Wilson in a moment, but to go back on Jaden Daniels, does it matter to you where he lands? Could be Washington, could be New England, could be a team that trades up for him. Is there a landing spot that you're projecting, you know, if you're taking Jaden Daniels where you say, all right, I'm a lot more comfortable if he lands here versus a lot more nervous if he lands elsewhere?
I think the answer is no. And maybe that's ridiculous, but I also see people taking Marvin Harrison at pick 17. And that feels far more egregious on just guessing, even though Marvin Harrison is a supreme prospect. Like I understand that if you are drafting Jaden Daniels in the first round, you are doing so knowing you're getting one of the more prolific running quarterbacks that have come out in recent memory, not Lamar Jackson or anywhere close. But after that, I feel like Jaden Daniels is going to add to it. Yeah. And I have to assume a team, no matter if they're dumb or smart, is going to take Jaden Daniels with the idea they want to operate using that running game as well. And if he becomes a running quarterback in this landscape where the quarterback position has been the past couple of years at 123, that will be excellent value. So I don't care if it's New England. Yeah. I don't care if it's Washington. If a team trades up for Jaden Daniels, if he's taken in the first round, the only time where this might not work out is if we do a Will Levis and Jaden Daniels falls into the early second and therefore might not start away. Like if Jaden Daniels is taken in the first round, he's going to be running quarterback.
I don't think Jaden Daniels is falling like that. No question.
I would be stunned if he did. Yeah.
If he makes it out of the top five, somebody's trading up. He's a significantly more intriguing prospect to me than Levis. All right, we'll end on Russell Wilson, although we do have some breaking news to pass along here. Ooh. Bills are releasing Jordan Poyer, not overly fantasy relevant, expected team that has to work its way under the cap. But just want to pass that along while we're live. Make the case for Russell Wilson, Joe. I despise this man. I've preyed on his downfall in a lot of ways, despite him being a Wisconsin Badger. I've just never been in on him. He's going in the 200s, though, in best ball drafts. Obviously, he's a free agent right now. We don't know where he's going to land. What makes him a good value? And I'll kind of ask a similar question to Daniels. Is there a spot he has to go for you to really buy in?
Yeah. So this is like quarterback 28. If we were looking at under like 28 to 30. So you don't have to do a lot to be fantasy relevant. 28 touchdown passes to 6 interceptions last year. Again, best ball, you're getting the best starts. So if I were to take a Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, I don't like Drake May for fantasy, at least not right now. That would be a landing spot question. But if you're taking one of these guys that you don't really know and you're kind of gambling, Russell Wilson gives you a safety net. I'll probably have another one of these veterans like the Aaron Rodgers or Jared Goff's to couple with that too. There's only going to be specific spots for Russell Wilson to go. For Jaden Daniels, like any team theoretically could trade up. There's probably like 8 or 9 right now that whether they're drafting in the top five or in the top 20, that could make a case that they think they're one guy away, one quarterback away, and Daniels can make a difference maker. There's really only three spots for Russell Wilson, and it clearly isn't Denver, obviously, going to cut him. But Pittsburgh, which I think is going to be the choice that he makes, he kind of alluded to wanting to go to a historic franchise. The Falcons aren't a historic franchise, and that would be the other team that I imagine would sign him. So if it's Pittsburgh, if it is the Falcons, I do think the Patriots could consider Russell Wilson too. Again, I talk about if you're being smart about this, you're trading down and capitalizing on the stupid teams that want to go ahead and up get a quarterback and try to get your own Bears version from last year, where you get an additional first round pick, maybe number one overall, because the dumb teams are typically dumb. Russell Wilson makes sense for all three of those spots. I think it's going to be the Steelers if they're ready to stomach that Kenny Pickett isn't the guy. And I understand, well, yeah, Joe, if Russell Wilson signs there, they're clearly there. They internally, as an organization, have to admit what every single everyone else person knows in the world. Kenny Pickett's not very good. And Mason Rudolph, not very good either. If you want to be a legitimate postseason winning team, not just one that gets there, good job, Mike Tomlin, for doing so for 50 years in a row. If you want to win multiple playoff games, Russell Wilson can still do that. And I think a guy like George Pickens would benefit tremendously from Russell Wilson moonballing to him three or four times a game. And I would be surprised if the Steelers don't add another receiver, if they trade away Deontay Johnson and kind of get more of another bona fide stud. The Ladd McConkleys of the world, I think, would fit in perfectly as well. Not with Russell Wilson per se, but like that feels Steeler-esque to me. That's the landing spot where I think Russell Wilson becomes a top 25 fantasy quarterback. Again, in best ball, you're getting the best starts, which is all I'm really shooting for. If I'm getting 211 Russell Wilson, get a quarterback 28. Yeah, I'll gladly roll the dice on any one of those three situations being enough starts for me.
All right, man. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Great stuff here. Looking forward to doing this with you each week throughout the NFL offseason. We'll talk a lot more about the NFL draft, a lot more about the incoming rookie class as we get closer to late April. We'll keep checking in on these best ball values and, of course, deliver you all the top news, all the top fantasy takes each week. So you can catch Joe and I weekly. Should be Wednesday most weeks. Might mix some Tuesdays in there, but we'll try to give you as much offseason fantasy content as we can. Joe, enjoy the rest of your day, man. Looking forward to doing this next week.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Nick.